Like to read verses 20 through verse 35. Let every man abide in the same calling wherein he was called. Art thou called being a servant? Care not for it. And be not anxious about it. But if thou mayest be made free, use it rather. For he that is called in the Lord being a servant is the Lord's free man. Likewise also he that is called being free is Christ's servant. You are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called therein abide with God. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord. Yet I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose, therefore, that this is good for the present distress. I say that it is good for a man so to be. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loosed from a wife? Seek not a wife. But, and if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh. But I spare you. But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth, that is, what time is left, that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoice not, and they that buy as though they possess not, and they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. But I would have you without carefulness or anxiety. He that is unmarried careth for the things that belongeth to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. There is difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, both in body and in spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. And this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is commonly, and that you may attend upon the Lord without distraction. This, of course, is a part of Paul's letter to the church that was located in the city of Corinth. Corinth serves as a picture of the world and society in which we live. Corinth was very powerful, materially prosperous city. It was a center of trade. Therefore, it was a very busy place. It was a place of constant activity. As far as worldly pleasure, Corinth was unrivaled in all of Greece. Being a city of trade, it had been invaded, if you will, by all sorts of religion, all sorts of philosophies. It was a very, very pagan society. Again, it serves as a picture of our own society. In Corinth, you would find the cults of the gods of Egypt, the gods of Rome, the gods of Greece. It was a city of temples dedicated to these false gods. And the culture of paganism contributed to the widespread morality of the city and the evil living. For example, the main temple in Corinth would have been to the goddess of love, Aphrodite. To this temple belonged over 1,000 priestesses who would go throughout the city at night as prostitutes. The very name of the city, Corinth, became a byword for immorality and debauchery. And a Corinthian girl was simply known as a prostitute. But in this city of religion, in this city of philosophy and immorality. God had a people that was in that city. Notice what the Lord said to Paul when Paul first went to Corinth. Notice in the book of Acts chapter 18. Acts chapter 18. Begin reading with verse 8. And Crispus, the chief ruler of the synagogue, believed on the Lord with all his house. And many of the Corinthians, hearing, believed and were baptized. Then spake the Lord to Paul in the night by a vision, Be not afraid, but speak and hold not thy peace. For I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee. For I have much people in this city. I have much people in this city. In the city of Corinth. But there was a problem. There was a problem, because in time, the people, God's people, for the most part, had become their surroundings. This, of course, is always a great danger. Paul mentioned three times, notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, that they were carnal. Three times. Verse 1, he says, And I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as unto babes in Christ. Verse 3, For ye are yet carnal. That's the second time. For whereas there is among you envy and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal? That's the third time. And walk as men. This means that they were fleshly and worldly minded. They were absorbed with the physical and the material. That's what it means to be carnal. It means that their way of thinking, the views that they had, their attitudes, their emotions, their lives were more in line with material things than spiritual things. Ye are carnal, he said. That is, their object, their focus was upon material things. What they placed value in was upon material things. Their loyalties were to the world, rather than to the spiritual. Their aspirations, their joys, their pleasures, their satisfactions, their security, their pursuits were all in the world rather than the realm of the spiritual. Their lives were intertwined and weaved to the physical and material rather than the spiritual. They were controlled, they were dominated by the physical and material rather than the spiritual. As a result of all of this, their lives, their homes, their families were filled with the clutter of the world. Good picture of today. And all of this clutter was brought within the church of Corinth. Never forget that the rubbish of the world does not come into the church without it first getting into the lives, the homes, and families of its members. And then they bring it in to the church. So much so here that Paul said to the church, ye are carnal. So you see, God's people had become their surroundings. This is always a danger. It always has been. Back to our text. from the opening statement of verse 1. Now concerning the things whereof ye wrote unto me, we learn that Paul is, from that statement, we learn that Paul is writing the letter of 1 Corinthians in response to a letter that he had received from them regarding some questions. And it is in this portion of the letter, beginning with 1 Corinthians chapter 7, that Paul begins to address their questions. And I believe he continues to do so throughout the letter. Notice the phrase, again in verse 1, now concerning the things. He's responding. Notice in verse 25, now concerning virgins. He's responding to a question. Chapter 12, verse 1, now concerning spiritual gifts. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 1, now concerning the collection for the saints. So you see, this is, Paul wrote the letter to answer some questions, and in chapter 7 he begins to do so. We read in chapter 8 in verse 1, now his touching things offered unto idols, which is the same way as saying now concerning. So Paul is answering their questions. And as you read through the letter, it is very easy to discern the nature and the matter of the questions. In chapter 7, where our text is found, there were questions concerning the positions of God's people, concerning the status of a child of God in life. Concerning 1 Corinthians 7, most commentaries spend the bulk of their time upon the subject of the questions. And in so doing, I believe they miss the main point. In this message, we'll not concern ourselves with the substance of the questions regarding marriage, regarding virgins, and so on. But we want to concern ourselves with Paul's exhortation in response to their questions. The subject of the message is the call to live above the temporal. And that's really what Paul is issuing here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. A call for them to live above, to rise above the physical and the material. Paul's exhortation is a sharp rebuke to their carnality. It is a sharp rebuke, and it is a warning concerning their carnality. But it's also an encouragement to live above the temporal. And as you read through and as we consider Paul's exhortation, remember that God is writing to us through the ages. God is writing to us. Now there is a frame of mind that Paul exhorts us to in response to their questions. He mentions five things that they would always be mindful of. These are things that ought to be woven throughout our lives, shaping and molding our lives. The temporal should not shape and mold our lives. The physical, the material, should not shape and mold our lives. If it does, hear the words loud and clear. Ye are carnal. Ye are carnal. What we are shaped by, what we are molded by, speaks volumes of where we are spiritually. It really tells us whether we're spiritual or carnal. And you're one or the other today. Spiritual or carnal. So let's look at these five things, and these are the things that ought to define our lives. These are the things that ought to say loud and clear, this is who I am. In verses 20 through 22, it is obvious that there was a question of whether a child of God should continue in the same employment that they had before they were saved. And the people had got all caught up in these things. And again, the devil has a way of getting God's people to get caught up in things that really don't really matter, and then miss what really does matter. And Paul answers here by saying, basically, whatever your employment is, remember this. You are Christ's servant. Whether you be a servant, whether you be a master, whether you be a servant, or whether you be a free man, remember this. Verse 22, you are Christ's servant. This needs to be our frame of mind. I am the servant of Christ. Paul is saying, whether you are a slave, whether you are a free man, and whatever opportunities may come your way, he says, if you're a slave and you have the opportunity to be free, take it. But whatever opportunities come your way, remember this, you are a servant of Christ. Don't let opportunities cause you to forget, I am Christ's servant. Oh, people get excited about an opportunity. I have an opportunity to do this and this and this. In all those opportunities, remember this. You are the servant of Christ. And if the opportunity in any way, in any degree, takes away from, overshadows the fact that you are the servant of Christ, it's a bad opportunity. Remember, you are the servant of Christ. This is never, ever secondary. We are the servants of Christ. Christ's servants. That ought to identify us. That ought to define our lives. Our lives are to be intricately woven around Jesus Christ. Christ's servants. Those words need to grip our hearts. No matter what our position is in this world, no matter what our status, no matter what our circumstances, remember this. Let this be your frame of mind. I am a servant of Jesus Christ. That is my responsibility. As his servants, our eyes are to be upon him. As his servants, our ears are to listen to him. As his servants, our feet are to be ready to do his bidding. As his servants, our wills are to be submissive to his will. So this should be our frame of mind. I am the servant of Christ. In every decision that you are faced with in life, this thought needs to be upon your mind. I am the servant of Christ. That'll keep you from making a lot of bad decisions. I am the servant of Christ. I am here first and foremost to serve Christ. That needs to shape all of our decisions. Well, I have this opportunity. I can make more money, or I can live in a better place, or we could go on and on and on and on. What's shaping your thoughts there? The physical and the material. Hear it loud and clear. You're carnal. You're carnal. And may I say that every carnal individual, everyone who is dominated
by the physical and the material takes away from the spirituality of a church. And this is how the clutter gets in. Secondly, we must remember that we are a purchased possession. In verse 23, "You are bought with a price. Be ye not the servants of men." You're bought with a price. We must never get away from this truth. In 1 Peter 1, verses 18 and 19, the price of the purchase is stated, first of all, negatively. Not with silver and gold. And then it is stated positively. But with the precious blood of Jesus Christ as of a lamb without blemish. This needs to be upon our mind at all times. I have been bought by Jesus Christ. I have been paid for with the precious blood of Jesus Christ. I have been bought by and for God. We read in 1 Corinthians 6, verses 19 and 20, "Ye are not your own. Ye are bought with a price." Because you were bought with a price, ye are not your own. You see, to be our own is the greatest ambition of sinful nature. It's always there. To be our own. But it's plain. You're not your own. You're not your own. The truth of that statement lies at the bottom of all true submission and service to God. You and I will never serve God until we first realize, I'm not my own. I don't belong to myself. I belong to Him. Do we get that? Do we get that? I belong to God. Everything about me belongs to God. Do we get that? Paul is telling them this needs to be your thought process. It is the forgetting of this basic truth that lies at the heart of refusing to recognize the authority of God. It is the forgetting of this basic truth that lies at the heart of all rebellion against God. It is the forgetting of this basic truth that refuses to let go and refuses to yield to God. It is the forgetting of this basic truth that causes people to pursue their own ways rather than God's ways. When you choose to pursue your own way instead of God's way, you are carnal and you have forgotten you are not your own. You've been bought with a price. Oh, how we need to always be mindful. We are always God's and completely God's. He goes on there in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 19 and 20, "Bought with a price, we're to glorify God in your body and your spirit, which are God's." Your body and spirit are God's. All of these people today that say, "It's my body." No, it's not. Your body and spirit belong to God. And we're to glorify God in our body and in our spirit. And in our text we read, we're bought with a price. Be ye not the servants of men. Be ye not the servants of carnality. Be ye not the servants of the physical and the material. Do not become the slaves to the things of this world, is what Paul is saying. Thirdly, notice verse 24. "Brethren," still talking about employment, "let every man wherein he is called therein abide. But do so with God." We are His servants. We have been bought with a price. And everything we do
we're to do with God. There's a lot of things you do that in your wildest imagination you can't say, I did it with God. No. What this is saying is stay connected with God. Stay close to God. Whatever your circumstances, whatever your position, whatever your status, your responsibility is not to grow in status in the world. Your responsibility is to serve God and to continue with God, to remain with God, to persist with God, to be connected with God, to be identified with God, to be defined by God. This needs to be our focus. If it's not, we're carnal. Number four, verse 25, last two words, be faithful. Be faithful. Be constant. Be true. Be devoted. Be unswerving. Be steadfast. Be dedicated. Be committed. Be reliable. Always be in a position and ready and willing to be used in the service of God as He sees fit. In order to be faithful, you must know what God requires. You must know what He requires. He tells us what He requires. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12 and 13. See, to be faithful, you don't invent your own requirements. You have to know His requirements. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 12. And now, Israel, what doth the Lord thy God require of thee? And he's going to answer it. But to fear the Lord thy God, that's reverence, to walk in all His ways, to love Him, and to serve the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, to keep the commandments of the Lord and His statutes, which I command this day for thy good. That's what God requires. We have to know His requirements if we're going to be faithful. And then another thing that we are to remember back in our text, it is stated by way of reminder in verse 29, the time is short. That is, the time is very brief. It is very short-lived. And it is fleeting. Now, there are many ways in which the time is short. But I believe when Paul speaks those words, he has in mind the Lord's return. We are to serve God, we are to abide with God, we're to be faithful to God, and we're to do so looking and expecting the return of Christ. Read the words over and over and over and over again. Read the words till they sink down into your hearts. Read the words until they grip your soul. The time is short. And it's getting shorter by the moment. Don't wrap your life up in that which does not matter, in that which is fleeting. The time is short. The realization of such, and most don't realize it. They'll make statements like, where's the time gone? As if they're in shock. Read what it says. The time is short. It's short. And if it was short then, it's even shorter now. This ought to make us more determined to serve Him, to be faithful to Him, to abide with Him.
It ought to make us more urgent. Here we are in the last days of the last days, and that fact has not gotten a hold of very many people. Because if it ever does get a hold of you, it'll change your life. It'll change the way you view everything. It hasn't gotten a hold of very many. This fact ought to make us more conscientious. It ought to make us more zealous. It ought to make us more passionate in spiritual matters. So in answering the question, he exhorts them to have a proper frame of mind. Now consider the scope of this frame of mind. He mentions five areas of our earthly life. He mentions these in verses 29 through 31. He mentions these to show the scope and the extent of what he is saying. First of all, we are to possess and maintain this frame of mind in married life. It says in verse 25 that both they that have wives be as though they had none. Though the instruction is addressed to husband, it applies both to husbands and wives. The instruction is not to abandon or neglect marital responsibilities, for that would go against other scripture. But what he was doing was calling them to a commitment to eternal matters in marriage. You want a good marriage? Both husband and wife, commit yourself to spiritual things. You'll have a good marriage. You commit yourself to the physical, you commit yourself to the material, and you will fill your married life with clutter, and you'll fill your home with clutter, and you'll drag some of the clutter into the church. That's how it works. Oh, we want to blame the world for bringing the clutter in church. No. The world's not what's dragged it in here. It gets in the lives of God's people. And they bring it in. So how do you get rid of it? We've got to drive the clutter out of the church. There's only one way to truly do that. Get it out of your life. You get it out of your life, and you'll clean up the church. You see, today people, oh, we got to clean up the church. That may be very true. I have no doubt about that. But how do you do it? Cleaning up lives, cleaning up homes, cleaning up marriages. Until that, you've only swept out some of the clutter. You've only taken a little bit of it. You haven't done anything. So we need to keep this frame of mind in our married lives. Commit ourselves to spiritual things in married lives. To live our lives as husband and wives in view of our relationship with God. Husbands, you must have a relationship with God. Wives, you must have a relationship with God. Husbands, you must not do anything that would hinder that wife's relationship with the Lord, and vice versa. In married life, the emphasis is to be upon the spiritual. Not on buying a bigger home, not on buying a bigger car, not on buying this and that, but upon spiritual things. This is what Paul is saying. In our married lives, we need to view it as this. You may be the wife of so-and-so, the husband of so-and-so, but remember this. I am Christ's servant. I belong to Him. I am to stay close to Him. I am to be faithful to Him. And the time is short. Don't build your life upon marriage. Well, we need to build our marriages, but we need to build our marriages upon the spiritual. Don't build your life upon your marriage. Because when you do, one day, That spouse that you love is going to leave this life. Don't build it all on your marriage. Build it on spiritual things. Secondly, we're to possess and maintain this frame of mind in our afflictions. Verse 30, they that weep as though they wept not. This is not a direction against weeping. But the direction or the instruction is this. In times of weeping, we must not allow sadness. We must not allow sadness to deter us. We must not allow it to control us and dominate us. But we must maintain this attitude throughout all sorrowful times. I am the servant of Christ. And in times of sorrow does not exempt me from serving Him. I belong to Him. I am to abide with Him. And I am to be faithful to Him. And in times of weeping, remember this, it's short, it's going to pass. But again, if you build your life around times of sorrow, you're carnal. He's saying, don't get caught up in these things. Possess and maintain this frame of mind in times of joy. Verse 30. They that rejoice as though they rejoice not. The truth is this. He begins with marriage. And in marriage there's going to be times of sorrow. People die. People get sick. There's going to be times of sorrow in marriage. There's also going to be times of joy. Don't build upon these things. Don't build your house upon the times of joy, because it won't last. There's going to be times of jubilation. There's going to be times of gladness. But in those times, maintain this point of view. I'm His servant. I belong to Him. I am to stay close to Him, and I am to be faithful to Him. And I believe, you can disagree if you want to, but I believe that we are more in danger of becoming disconnected with the Lord in times of joy than we are in times of sorrow. The danger is there for both. But did not God specifically warn Israel that when they got to the land of Canaan, that's when they were in the most danger of forgetting? Possess and maintain this frame of mind in all worldly business. Verse 31. They that buy, as though they possess not. It's not a sin to buy, that's part of life. The direction here is, whatever you buy, keep everything in the right perspective. I am the servant of God. I belong to Him. I am to stay close to Him. Therefore, I should not buy anything that would deter me from serving God. I should not buy anything that would break my connection with God. I should not buy anything that would make me less faithful in serving God. And everything we buy, remember this perspective. I'm His servant. I belong to Him. I'm to stay close to Him, and I'm to be faithful. We're to possess and maintain this frame of mind in all of our worldly concerns. Verse 31, and they that use this world is not abusing it. What's it mean to use the world? Well, that's what God put it here for. To use the world is to make necessary and proper use of the world, such as furnishing food, clothing, medicine, protection. It is right to use the world because it was made for these purposes. But notice what it says. We're not to abuse it. We're not to abuse the world. That is, we're not to make the world a matter of indulgence. To do so is to abuse it. And why do people abuse the world? Because they're carnal. Because they think of the physical and the material rather than the spiritual. It means to abuse the world is that you make it the main object and purpose of your life. You can deny it all you want to. You can say, I love the Lord more than anything, but your life says whether or not you do. Nothing's more important to me than the Lord. Well, your life decisions state that. You can say whatever you want, but the way you live your life has already stated it. I'm here to serve God. I'm His. I'm to stay close to God, be faithful to Him. And this applies to any use of the world. And any use of the world that comes before God is an abuse. And after making that statement, he gives us by way of reminder, the fashion of the world passeth, that is, it's presently passing away. So we see the frame of mind that we are to have. We are to see the scope. Consider the overall exhortation. Paul is saying, keep everything in proper perspective. In all earthly matters, in all earthly situations, keep everything in its right place. You do that, you'll keep a lot of clutter out of your home. You'll prevent clutter from coming in to the house of God. He's exhorting and teaching them to develop and always maintain a proper point of view. To always maintain a proper position and purpose. To always have a proper frame of mind. And that means to always put the spiritual above the temporary. He is exhorting them to have a proper intent, a proper purpose, a proper focus. That the Lord must be first. The Lord must be foremost. What he's calling for here is undivided devotion to the Lord. He's exhorting them to keep everything again in its proper place. It's not that all temporal things are unimportant. It's not that all temporal things are sinful. It is that we must realize the proper relationship between the temporal and the spiritual. And if we don't realize that, we're carnal. We're carnal. And if you're carnal, you're in great danger. You're in great danger. If a man of the house is carnal, he will ruin his house. He'll ruin it. There'll be an atmosphere of carnality throughout the house. That also comes into the house of God. Paul is saying here, do not allow the temporal to divert you. Do not allow it to sidetrack you. Do not allow it to draw you away. Live above the temporal. It's the same thing that Christ said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6, verses 19 through 21. And in Matthew 6, verse 33. It's what Paul repeated in Colossians 3, verses 1 and 2. Set your affection on things above, not on the things on the earth. That's what Paul is saying here in 1 Corinthians 7. But remember, God is writing to us through the ages. And then lastly, notice the purpose. Why did Paul exhort them in this way? Verse 35, and this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, that you may attend upon the Lord without distraction. And I believe the immediate context of verse 35 goes back to verses 33 and 34. But there's also an application to everything that's been said so far. Paul is calling upon them to put the spiritual above the temporal. And he says, I tell you these things for your own profit. I tell you these things for your own good. You know, you didn't believe when your parents told you that the spanking you were about to get was for your own good. You didn't believe it. And you don't believe it today in spiritual things. It's for your own good. People don't believe it. They don't. How can it possibly be for my good to maybe lose out on something temporal in order to gain something spiritual? How can that be for my good? It's for your own good. Put the Lord first and foremost. It's for your own profit. He also goes on to say, you know, another thing we thought that our parents were doing with rules is they're trying to rob us of all our fun. I remember on more than one occasion, Ben and Amanda both would say, you're just trying to keep us from having fun. I said, you're right. That is why God put me here, to keep you from having fun. Every day I get up and I think, Amanda, Ben, how can I ruin your day? I mean, how ridiculous. But that's the attitude people have toward God also. Well, God just don't want us to have fun. He wants to entrap us. And Paul says here, not that he might cast a snare upon you. He says, I don't tell you these things to cast a snare upon you. I tell you these things, but for that which is comely. I tell you these things so that you can live a beautiful and honorable life. You want a beautiful life? Put the spiritual ahead of the temporal. You want an honorable life? Put the spiritual ahead of the temporal. You want an ugly life? You want a dishonorable life? Live for the temporal rather than the spiritual. But if you want a life that is comely, beautiful, elegant, honorable, live above the temporal. He then goes on to say, I tell you these things that you may attend upon the Lord without distraction. That you may give attention to the Lord without distraction. Keep in mind, Corinth was a trade city. City of trade. It was a busy place. Cities are filled with all kinds of distractions. Our society is filled with all kinds of distractions. What he's saying here is, I tell you these things so you don't get so bogged down with the earthly that you cannot serve God as you ought. Due to the nature of the world in which we live, which is completely absorbed with the here and now, and due to the nature of sin, which is rebellion, and due to human nature, which is self-absorption, and due to the ploys of Satan, it is a constant danger that the child of God become their worldly surroundings. It is a constant danger that the child of God be sucked up by the quicksands of the world and sin and flesh and the devil. The very purpose of these exhortations, that we might live a comely life without distractions, ought to fill us with a desire to give heed to what Paul is saying. In closing, remember the condition of the Corinthians. You're carnal. I like, they wrote this letter to Paul asking him questions, and Paul didn't just start off with answering their questions. He started off with telling them all their condition. In other words, what he's saying is, your questions aren't the most important thing here. You ever notice the backslidden, the unfaithful, they have a way of asking questions that try to divert? We need to ask ourselves, are we earthly or spiritual? Our loyalties, are they earthly or are they spiritual? Our focus, Is it earthly or spiritual? Our delights, the things we take delight and pleasure in. Is it earthly things or spiritual things? Where we find our security. You know why God's people get so upset and bent out of shape over the economy? Because that's where their security is. We need to ask ourselves, where is our security? Is it in the earth? Or is it in the spiritual? Our aspirations. What is it that we aspire to? Earthly or spiritual? What are we pursuing most earnestly? Earthly or spiritual? What about our attitudes? Are they more in line with the earthly? Are they more in line with the spiritual? What about our thoughts? Are they more in line with the earthly? Or are they more in line with the spiritual? What about our emotions? You say, well, I don't see how emotions have anything to do with it. Oh, it has a lot to do with it. You get more upset about the loss of a material thing, or do you get more upset about the loss of a spiritual blessing? Where's our emotions? Are they intertwined with the earth? Are they intertwined with the spiritual? These are the people that drag themselves into the house of God. Something bad has happened during the week, or so they think. And they want everybody to know, I'm miserable today. You need to feel sorry for me. I'm very upset today. They're not concerned with the spiritual. Earthly or spiritual? We need to ask ourselves that question. We need to see the dangers of the temporal. Again, not all temporal things are sinful. But all temporal things have danger. They all do. The cares of this world choke the world or the word. Not all the cares of this world are sinful. Some of them are our responsibility. But we must realize that everything temporal is a threat to spirituality. We need to take seriously the call to live above temporal things. Hopefully, the older you get, the more you come to realize what matters. The more you come to realize it's not the temporal. It's the spiritual. Oh, how we need to realize this basic truth. It is a basic truth that will make our lives beautiful, to make our lives honorable. It is a basic truth that will keep the church pure also. Just keeping things in the right perspective. Keeping everything where it belongs. Spiritual and temporal. The Lord took it so far. And God's people have a problem with this. But the Lord took it this far. Let the dead bury their dead. He says even that's not to interfere with the spiritual. He took it so far as to say, if any man hate not his father and mother, and forsake all, and follow me, he cannot be my disciple. God help us to live above temporal things. Aren't you glad that you can live above temporal things? The unsaved sinner is bound to the material. They are bound to the temporal. They can't live above the temporal. That's their life. But that should not be so with the child of God. We can live above the temporal. God help us that we would. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song.